Hi, welcome back to the Mandarin Blueprint Podcast, episode 187 today. 那今天我要讲的是关于习惯的问题，具体是关于养成习惯。So, I want to talk about habits, but specifically how to keep showing up every single day. So, I sent out a newsletter recently, it should be about a week ago now, about this topic, and I think I'm going to give you some...tips today that should help you out in case you haven't read that. And if you have read that, I'm going to build upon those ideas a little bit. So when it comes to learning Chinese to a high level of fluency, I think probably the number one most important thing, even more important than the methods you use actually, is showing up every day, consistency, and therefore habits are vital. So what can tend to happen when we learn Chinese or acquire Chinese is that because it's such a long process and there's so many different levels that you reach along the way and life can get in the way and your priorities can change. Maybe Chinese is the most important thing in your life and then suddenly it's not for some reason. It's really easy to just fall off the wagon and it's really easy to just stop acquiring Chinese for a while. Even if you have great methods that you do enjoy,you can get used to them and they can become boring. Or like I said, you just get distracted, things happen, right? So we need a way to make sure that we do stay on track. And I think the number one thing that you can do, first of all, is to find your why, find very good reasons. So basically that means to find your reason for acquiring Chinese to fluency. So this also could be multiple reasons. So you think of the reason, whatever it is for you, you find those reasons, and then you take your reasons and you try and think about that in a deeper way. So for example, oh, I want to learn Chinese because I find it really fascinating. Okay, that's fine. Or I want to learn Chinese because I think it will make me look cooler or more interesting or more attractive to the opposite sex for some reason. Okay. Another reason might be, oh, I want to increase my ability to make money. Speaking a second language, even if you don't directly use it on your CV for a job, it still makes you look more attractive, more of an impressive candidate for a certain job position. And of course, actually being able to use the language itself, it opens up all kinds of opportunities that you can't even fathom now, right? If you actually are able to speak fluently, read and write emails, you can connect with a whole group of potential customers that you might not have otherwise. So yes, opportunities abound, etc. But then you take those surface reasons, whatever they may be, and then you think about how that relates to how you can contribute to the world. So for example, in terms of business opportunities and things like that, the only way you can make money in business is by delivering value to someone. And I think that's a big drive that a lot of us do have to contribute to either our family or to the world in general. So that's like, I think, step one. And then step two is building habits around your identity, saying, I'm not trying to learn Chinese, like accomplish a thing. I am trying to be someone or become someone new, the kind of person that is fluent in Chinese. So that identity that you're trying to take on, whether that's a Chinese acquirer, I like that term, that has a nice ring to it, or a Chinese enthusiast, or a Chinese fanatic even, that's probably my favorite. You choose an identity that you want to become, and then every time you show up to acquire Chinese, whether that's learning characters or immersing or practicing speaking with a tutor, a native speaker, that is going to cast a vote for that identity. And then eventually, that identity will become who you are, and you'll just show up every day to do these habits, even if you don't track them or remind yourself to do so or create cues and make them obvious and easy and things like that. And eventually, once you have become that new identity, which doesn't take that long actually, it just takes a bit of consistency over a relatively short period of time, maybe a few weeks or something like that, which doesn't take that long, it just takes maybe a few weeks of consistent effort. Once you're there, it feels good to just do the habit because it feels good to be you, right? Now, to go from where you are now to taking on this new identity takes time and, like I said, consistent effort. You have to show up every day and cast those votes by doing the stuff. And a great way to make sure that you do that is to set daily goals. So this is mainly what I want to talk to you about today. So I still set daily goals and tick them off on a daily basis. Not because I still need to really, but I just enjoy doing that. So by now, my identity is certainly one of a Chinese acquirer at least. I think I also qualify for a Chinese enthusiast, and I'm a language coach as well. And I also design courses that make Chinese easier for people. So spending time with Chinese every day for me is deeply ingrained in me and is a part of who I am. But I still track my habits, even though I don't technically really need to. It's just that I love having that data available. I love looking at how many hours I've invested, and I'll tell you a bit more about why it's so important to do that. I love looking every week or every month or even every year now into my habits and seeing how many hours of immersion I've accumulated, how many hours or minutes of shadowing each day or each month or each year I have accumulated. Now, another very important reason why I still track my habits even after all this time, so tracking my habits every day and making sure that I do a certain amount of immersion and a little bit of shadowing practice is really helpful for me just to stay on top of what I'm doing, because it helps me avoid what is often referred to as the okay plateau. So every skill isn't just a smooth upwards curve of improvement. What tends to happen is that you improve quite quickly and then it kind of levels off as the methods that you're using and the time that you're investing sort of has a law of diminishing returns, I guess. But what the real pros do, what the masters of a certain craft do, say like the best tennis players or the best football players in the world, what they do is once they start to level off, they up their game, they up their input, or they change their methods to get to that next level. So the approach to get from say zero to a decent beginner is very different from say getting from where I am, like a relatively advanced speaker, to getting to somewhere like C1, C2, native level spoken fluency. So I need to make sure that I am on top of my habits, and plus I'm super busy. I have two young kids under two and a business that takes up almost all my time, 6 days a week, 6.5 days sometimes. So I need to make sure that I invest the minimum amount every single day, even if it's only a little bit every single day, because those improvements compound over, say, months and years. But I'll talk a little bit more about reviewing your habits in a sec. Let's just first talk about how to create these habits in an interesting and engaging way. It's going to make sure that you show up every single day consistently and get to the level of Chinese that you want. So here's how I personally create and manage my daily goals to make sure that I stay on track and I make consistent daily improvement, which leads to long-term compounded improvements. So before I created my daily goals, I looked at what I wanted to achieve and where I was and how much time I had per day and how much of a priority Chinese was. And that helped me decide not only what I needed to do, but how much I was going to invest in each activity. So there are not that many activities you actually need to perform to become awesome at Chinese. You just need to do about 9 or 10 things in total, depending on what level you're at. So if you don't know the 3,000 most common Chinese characters, for example, that needs to be a daily habit that you need to do, because you need to get to 3,000 characters if you want to be able to consume advanced native content. I know more than 3,000 characters, so actually that's not on my list of things that I need to do. No matter what your level is, whether you're an absolute beginner, an intermediate, advanced, or above me, you'll need to do some sort of immersion every day. It's basically you need to do immersion as long as you want to continue to improve at Chinese. So that just means listening to Chinese stuff that you understand, that you preferably enjoy, watching stuff or reading stuff. When it comes to reading, I tend to focus on one of the first two with some sort of listening element. If you just focus on reading, there are advantages to that, but there are also disadvantages. Listening is just overall a better activity to focus on. It's going to make you sound more like a native, and it's going to be able to help you pick up stuff easier. And it gives you something to imitate, and that's how we learn language, right? We learn language by listening and then imitating primarily. Reading is just absolutely fantastic as a support for listening. So, for example, if you're watching TV, you have subtitles there to help you understand what's going on. And listening and reading at the same time in general is just a fantastic activity for you, because the reading pushes along your listening and the listening pushes along your reading. It's just this wonderful synergistic activity that you should focus on. But just reading alone, I only do that when I'm like with my family in bed at night and I don't want to disturb anyone, right? So I'll just be reading a comic or something like that. Anyway, immersion is definitely something that you always want to be doing. That's a habit you will definitely need for pretty much any level. And then if you're ready, you can also focus some sort of output activity. So that means speaking or writing. That's usually conversing with a native speaker on some level, or shadowing, right? So just listening and repeating stuff out loud to yourself. That's a really powerful activity as well. So those are like the three sort of phases of language acquisition. So the first one is study, learning pronunciation, characters, giving you the ability to comprehend stuff, basically, learning how to read primarily, and learning a base vocabulary of 1,500 words or so, just to make sure you can understand sentences at least. And then the second stage or phase is immersion, and the third stage or phase is output. So it's those three things. Three activities in each thing, so around about 9 or 10 total activities you need. Now, if you're a beginner or an intermediate and you don't know 3,000 characters, the Mandarin Blueprint method is the solution, right? Just if you haven't got that course, just go get it and go try it out at least, because it just takes care of the whole study section for you. It will teach you over 3,000 characters, almost 12,000 words, get you to pretty much any level of comprehension you want, and it will teach you a nice big chunk of immersion as well. So lots of graded material. I think there's 15,000 sentences, all comprehensible, very high quality male and female audio for each one. So those are the activities that you'll need to do depending on your level or your preferences or your priority with Chinese at the moment. You don't want to take on too many activities at one time. You don't want to try and yangcheng, like build, create too many habits all at once. It can be a little bit overwhelming. So maybe take on two or three maximum at first. So let's say we take on three habits. One is doing Mandarin Blueprint Method lessons, or if you don't have the Mandarin Blueprint Method and you don't want to get it, I guess that would just be learning characters, right? Then another one would be something to do with immersion. So some sort of watching, listening, or reading Chinese every single day for a certain amount of time. And then third, it would be producing the language. So you might not be ready for that if you're just starting out. You don't have to do this immediately, but it's a good thing to do if you're at least an intermediate or above. Focus on some sort of speaking practice. So it could be shadowing, like I said, or it could be booking a time with a tutor. So here's what I suggest you do. Once you've got your three habits, you create two habits for each one. So two different versions of each habit. Now, this is an amount you have to do every single day, and you cannot break this streak. If you do, it's not the end of the world, of course, but your goal is to not ever break the streak, to keep going. So it's a very good idea to choose an amount based on time or achievement for each goal that is like embarrassing if you don't do it. So for characters, for example, or Mandarin Blueprint Method lessons, you choose one lesson or one character. Anyone can do that, right? And it's even if you're at the end of your day and you're super tired, you've had a big long day and you're about to close your eyes to go to sleep, and you just remember you haven't done your habits, you need to be able to go and do at least your minimum. Now, if you read a book like Atomic Habits, and I believe this is a concept in some other habit books, like The Power of Habit and stuff like that, there's something called the 2-minute rule, and that's basically what I'm talking about. It's something that is so small, it can be done in 2 minutes. You create that version of each goal to make sure that you do not break the streak. And this is very powerful because what happens is often you'll start doing that 2-minute version or the minimum daily goal for that particular habit, and it turns into a lot more anyway. And it's just something powerful about not breaking that streak. We often say here at Mandarin Blueprint, never have a zero day. And it's a very similar concept to what we're talking about here. It's very powerful not to break that streak. And then for immersion, for example, you might make a minimum daily habit of, say, 10 minutes of active immersion. That means you have to be fully focused on what you're listening to, watching, or reading. I would kind of recommend a minimum of 30 minutes if you want to see some substantial results. That's my minimum of active immersion because, like I said, I'm super busy. But that's what I set as my immersion minimum, 30 minutes. So that could be watching 30 minutes of a TV show. Okay, tick, I've done that. Or just listening passively to something for, say, 2 hours. So the reason why I say 2 hours when it comes to passive immersion is because passive immersion is like listening to something whilst you're doing something else. Now, depending on what you're doing, there's like a spectrum of percentage, let's say, of how much you're focused on the actual content, depending on what activity you're doing. So if I'm walking my dogs, I can focus like 80%. It's not 100% because I have to look out for other dogs. My dogs are kind of crazy. And, you know, I have to pick up dog poop and stuff like that. So it's not 100% focused, but it's pretty close to 100%. It's pretty quiet and pretty relaxed. But if I'm like working out, then it's probably like 20% or 30% overall because I'm more tired, I'm looking around, I'm making sure I'm staying safe in the gym and all that sort of stuff. But overall, we think, you know, passive immersion is on average equivalent to about 25% of what active immersion is. So just basically times it by 4. So that's immersion. Now, when it comes to speaking, I mean, you don't want to commit to necessarily speaking to a native speaker every single day necessarily, although you could use an app like HelloTalk or Tandem, and you could just make it a point to have at least a 5-minute conversation with someone, even if it's just texting. That's still output, right? It's definitely something. Some kind of output, say for 5 minutes a day. Or maybe you want to go a bit harder, and depending on your level and again, your priorities and what you want to do, you could maybe say, oh, okay, I'm going to have one entire italki session every single day, you know, just like 45 minutes or something like that. You can also do 30-minute sessions on italki. Whatever is your minimum that if you didn't do it, you'd be kind of embarrassed, that's what you need to do. I would recommend when it comes to output speaking, you set yourself a minimum of some kind of shadowing, not actually communicating with a native speaker, because there's too many outside factors. You know, maybe the person doesn't turn up, or maybe it's just too much effort to go and sign up and find someone, a real person to talk to. It's much better if you say, oh, no, I'm just going to talk to myself for 5 minutes. I'm going to say some Chinese out loud to myself, or I'm going to shadow a piece of material, like copy some Chinese listening material and read along with it at the same time for 5 minutes. That's what I do personally for shadowing. I have a minimum of 5 minutes of shadowing a day, and that's my output practice done. So once you've got your minimums, you're all set. Remember, do not make your minimums challenging. Make them to the point where it's like, if I don't do all of these three minimums in a day, it's embarrassing, all right? Because it's so easy. So I personally have a minimum of 30 minutes active immersion, 5 minutes of shadowing, and that is the minimum thing I have to do every single day to progress at Chinese. Now, I also have two other goals, which I try to meet every single day. These are, I don't know a name for them yet. I'm gonna call them maybe the maximum goals or the ideal goals. They're the kind of goals that are still absolutely 100% achievable if your day goes well. But if you don't achieve them for whatever reason, it's fine. You can break the streak anytime you want. The only habits that are sacred that you never break, or you aim to never break, are your minimum goals. So my larger goal, my maximum goal, my ideal goal for immersion is 2 hours, but you obviously choose whatever you want. And I go for 30 minutes of shadowing as well. Now, shadowing for 30 minutes can be tough, but you can space that out throughout the day. So I think anyone can do that, even if it's just 5 minutes, 5 minutes, five, like sets of 5 minutes. So I think anyone can do that if it's spread throughout the day. So I can do 30 minutes of shadowing in one go, and sometimes more, because I'm used to it and it's not too strenuous for me. It's still quite strenuous, but it's doable. That's no problem for me if I focus, right? And I plan my day and I try to get some of it done in the morning, for example. That's a really good technique to use. So I highly recommend that you go and try that out. You set a minimum goal for whatever habits that you need to create that you know that you need to perform every single day to get awesome at Chinese. You create a minimum version and a maximum or ideal version of each goal. And that's sort of the pull and push that you have throughout each day. So what that does is it pushes you along. It makes sure that you definitely always do something towards your goals, which maintains that identity. It casts votes for that identity as a Chinese enthusiast, fanatic, acquirer, etc. And also, very importantly, it keeps you pushing to improve more and put in more every day. So you've got that push and that pull every single day that works really synergistically, I think. Working really well for me anyway. I really enjoy tracking my habits, and I've managed over the last 9 months or so to get in just under 900 hours of immersion. Now, not all of these hours of immersion are active. I'd say at least half are though. And that's a bunch of hours that I would not have reached if I didn't have my minimum and maximum goals. And I just want to say, I haven't done studies on this. I'm not saying that this is proven to be the most effective way of managing your habits. I'm just telling you that it works really well for me, and I recommend you go and try it out. So I hope that was helpful for you. Do let me know in the comments or reply to us by email at contact@mandarinblueprint.com and tell me what you think about it. So let's jump into today's comments and emails. The first one is from Hannah. And she says, I've been holding out on asking grammar questions and such and trying to just trust the process. I think it's working with a question mark. Sometimes I'll be thinking of how to express a simple thought in Chinese and it will just come to me like a blueprint from the now hundreds of sentences we are constantly reviewing. It's funny because a few times I've caved and looked up a grammar point and I promptly forget it the very next day. Yeah. Trust the process. I know it's tough, especially at the beginning, but you use the same process to acquire your first language to fluency. You just listened and listened and listened, and then you practiced using what you already kind of knew, what you already had acquired. Yeah, and looking up grammar points is kind of, to me, the same thing as sort of saving words in Pleco. It's kind of, it's not exactly the same thing, but it's just as useless most of the time. Sometimes saving the word, just like sometimes looking up a grammar structure or grammar point, can help you. Like saving a word can keep the word in your mind a little bit longer and causes you to click with it. Same with looking up a grammar point. But overall, I think that looking up grammar points and saving words in your dictionary are both kind of a waste of time. And it's much better to just relax and trust the process. Keep listening, keep watching, and consuming comprehensible content, and it will just naturally become a part of you. Another one from Hannah. She says, yes, if you haven't found it already, the app Du Chinese has been a lifesaver as far as graded readers go. It's very organized and there are tons of stories, nonfiction to work through. Each story has also an audio companion that highlights each sentence as it's read, and you can adjust the speed. So it doubles as listening practice too. The only con is that it doesn't have any kind of pictures or visuals, which is what I like about actual reader books. So yeah, go ahead and check out Du Chinese. Of course, in Mandarin Blueprint and the Mandarin Blueprint Method, we have lots of graded reading material, and we want to add more and more as the months and years go by. But there are some great resources out there for extra graded material. Du Chinese, I've heard great things about it, as well as I'm just a personal favorite. I've always liked Pop-Up Chinese. Unfortunately, they're not really working on new stuff anymore. But their old stuff you can still access for free. I just really like them. The dialogues are really interesting and quirky. But to a lesser extent, Chinese Pod, I think it's that Chinese Pod, just the sheer amount of content on there is really commendable. Mandarin Companion as well, of course. They have audio versions of all their stuff and they have great stories. Great graded readers. So the next one is from John here. He says, are tones for Gogo in Gogo Ji Sui Le, as in how old is the dog? Gogo means dog. It's like a cute way of saying dog. Meant to be second, because obviously it's Gogo, and Go, and Ji. So it's three third tones in a row. So John was basically saying, isn't that supposed to be two second tones and then the third tone when you have multiple third tones together? As the recordings almost sound like they are third, first tone, similar to Hao Hao. Hao hao, when used thoroughly. Well, actually, it's you're right. Your ear is correct, except it's more like a third, fifth tone, I believe. So it's hao hao, hao hao. Well, I might be wrong on that. It might be third, first, but go, 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 go is almost definitely third and fifth tone. But with the fifth tone, we call it the contrarian tone. You know, the fifth tone naturally tends to be the opposite of the previous one in terms of pitch, but it's always just very short. So go, go, or a ma, ma, right? So ma, ma. Right, so it's like the ma is high and then the fifth tone ma goes low and it goes the opposite way too. This is just another example of listen and listen and listen and it will just click. If you just imitate how it's done, don't try to analyze too much, you'll have a more enjoyable time. But yeah, go ji sui le, so it's supposed to be third, fifth tone. So your ears, that's the really good news about this, your ears I do it like really on point. Your pronunciation is obviously really good, John. Next, Colin says, my Chinese friends have sometimes volunteered corrections. Yeah, sometimes a friend corrects a single thing I said and sometimes corrects some general problem I have. And this has been a lot of the best input I have gotten. But I quickly learned not to ask friends to teach me some point. At best, I guess you mean grammar point, right? At best, my friend will not have that issue in mind and we will not be prepared to discuss it. At worst, it is irritating. Luke and Phil are exactly right about why not to ask friends to be teachers. Yeah, if you asked me about how English works, how does was and were work? That's kind of simple, I guess. I'd just be like, well, was is the past tense, but I wouldn't know to the depth of like past perfect or present perfect, future perfect or simple, all these different pasts, all these different tenses that we have. If you ask me to analyze English and tell me why a certain thing is used a certain way, I certainly couldn't tell you. And to be honest, I also couldn't tell you that much when it comes to Chinese either. My answer is usually just keep listening, just keep listening, which I know gets annoying, but it does work, as I mentioned with Hannah. And Chinese people are no different. Like if you ask, oh, how does le work? Well, they'll be like, they'll just start saying sentences with le. and then they'll start analyzing it themselves in order to answer it. Because they don't know consciously. What is le? I guess it's past tense. Well, sometimes it's used in the future or the present. Le. And they'll be thinking about it and you'll puzzle them, right? Which will annoy them, right? And I sometimes ask my wife like questions that are clients ask us. I'm like, oh, I'll double check something with her. And she'll be like she always has a sigh. She's always like, oh man, okay, another grammar question from Luke. All right. Like she doesn't enjoy it because it makes her, well, first of all, she instinctively knows that it's silly. It's silly, like analyzing the language. She knows that, well, I speak it really well and I don't know. So how is knowing gonna make you speak it really well? It confuses her. As it does me too. But I also get the urge to want to know. I super get that as well. Next is Brian. He says, in the sentence, 他说服我帮他做这件事, I persuaded her to help him do this thing, do this activity or whatever. Your female speaker pronounces 说服 and the male speaker pronounces it 说服. I noticed that Pleco, there are two entries for 说, which is both 说 and 说. 说 meaning to persuade, right? So what's going on? Is it just a matter of preference? Why is it pronounced differently? From my experience, it is a matter of preference. Some people say 说服. I like to say 说服 personally. I don't know why. 说服 actually sounds cooler. I like that more, but I just tend to, it comes out 说服 for me. But people say it equally the same amount in my experience. There's not one that's more common. But I do have a friend who's from Sichuan, and I don't know if it's because she's from Sichuan, because I mean, I very rarely hear anyone say this, but she says shui instead of shei. So when she's saying who in Chinese, the most common pronunciation by far is shei, right? But also it's fine, absolutely fine to say shui. I thought it was maybe her being a bit drungby, like just sort of showing off a little bit, like maybe it's a bit more formal or something. I don't think it is. I just think people just use it in a, just, I don't know what's going on with those two, to be honest. But just, I just know that sometimes people say shui, and sometimes they say shei, and shei is way more common, and I don't really think that much more about it. Next is from Andy. He says, I have several questions. First, please explain how the characters of these two words produce their meanings. And the two words are 本是, meaning ability or skill, and 本来, meaning original or originally or at first. Okay. And he says, many words are easy, but these are more challenging for me. This is especially true due to the original meaning we learned for 本, which is notebook. That's the key word or the definition that we teach you in the Mandarin Blueprint Method when you learn that character. So many characters, first of all, have multiple different meanings, and even if they have the same pronunciation, but we don't want to overwhelm you by teaching you multiple definitions for one character. We just teach you what we consider to be one of the most common definitions, and then you can build on the other definitions as you see that character in context of words and sentences later on. Again, getting all of your deeper understanding and acquisition of the language through input. Even if you aren't aware of other definitions that might be at play within a certain compound word, it doesn't matter because you can still make mnemonics based off of anything, right? So let me give you an example. Bun means root, and that is the, bun means, bun here means notebook, but I would say a more common meaning of it, using in the two different words that we have here, is actually root. So the root of something, which makes more sense, right? In terms of looking at these compound words, the relationship between the characters and how that forms the final definition of the word, it makes a lot more sense. So root thing, 本事, meaning skill. So a skill or your ability is something deeply rooted inside the depths of your brain, right? You can imagine it because you've ingrained that skill so deeply over lots and lots and lots of practice and study of theory, perhaps. So that's like a great mnemonic. It just works. Root matter thing, right? But even if you aren't aware that button also means root and you just know it as notebook, you could still make a mnemonic, right? But sure, notebook thing. So I imagine, like, just off the top of my head, imagine like a skill, someone in order to learn a skill, maybe, I don't know, I could just imagine someone, they want to learn Chinese kung fu, right? So obviously this is not how you learn kung fu, right? But he's taking notes in his notebook, looking at a master like Bruce Lee, like doing his stuff. He's like, ooh, right? He's building that skill by writing in his notebook. I visualize that. And that is enough to create a mnemonic to learn that word instantly, okay? So 本来 is a similar thing. Notebook, come, right? Lai means to come, right? And it means original. So I imagine, again, I visualize a notebook, someone writing in a notebook, and then something coming from that notebook. What was something that originally came from a notebook? I don't know. We could say, I don't know, let's say the Bible, right? One of the oldest books in existence, if not the oldest book in existence. Let's say it came from, originally, some guy writing down stuff in a notebook, right? So visualization is very important, right? Or at least it helps. A guy in a big robe and a big beard, right? And he's writing stuff in a notebook. Maybe even he's like listening to God talking to him, right? So I'm just visualizing all this stuff. So notebook come, think something that came from a notebook originally, the Bible, right? Yeah. So maybe that's not historically accurate, I don't know, but it helps to memorize, and it's certainly not etymologically accurate, 100% no, but it works. I'm gonna remember that word, and that's the goal. So I hope that's clear, like making mnemonics. It's nice to know about etymology, and if you wanna know about character etymology, I recommend the Outlier Dictionary for Pleco. That's just really good. It's got really good and relatively very, I don't know if it's 100% accurate because I don't have anything to compare it to, but it seems like those guys really know what they're doing. And there's a second part to the question. In this sentence, please share your thoughts on how to interpret lai zuo. If I just add their primary meanings together, this come and do, lai zuo, zuo means to do. Is 来做啊 equivalent to 做吧? So let's look at the sentence. 你有本事,你来做啊? Right? So if you have the skill, or if you think you've got, basically it's like, if you think you've got, you're talking a big game, basically. 你有本事,你来做啊? Like, you think you got what it takes? All right, you come and do it, sort of thing. But if you replace that with 吧, I mean, 你有本事,你来做吧? That could still have a bit of attitude with it, but ba is generally a bit more soft in that situation. But ni lai zuo is like kind of like a bit more, that guy's got a bit more attitude about him. It's a little bit ruder, more impatient thing. But the reason why I know this and instinctively without studying it is simply because I've heard and seen that in many contexts. That's that thing, mainly from watching TV and listening to podcasts and stuff. So I have an instinctive knowledge, a feeling associated with those characters. I see lai is often used in different ways. Is there some holistic way to understand lai? Yeah, again, sorry to be annoying, but the best way to holistically understand a character or a word is to get comprehensible input. Don't get mad at me. But yeah, thanks so much for the question, Andy. And that is the last question for today. So I hope that was helpful for you. I very much enjoyed it. And I will see you again next month. Thanks. Bye-bye.